Welcome to This Week in Debian, the podcast that brings you the latest news and interviews inside the Debian community. Brought to you by FrostbiteSystems.com, providing desktops and notebooks pre-installed with Debian. Every purchase from Frostbite Systems, a portion of the proceeds will be donated back to Debian and help support this great project. So stop on by FrostbiteSystems.com and get your Frostbox today.
Welcome to Worcester. $1.25, please.
Hey, it's Towbooth Willie. Haven't seen you in a long time. How's it going, man?
Good. Thanks for asking, Pop.
Hey, Willie, the last time I talked to you, said you were installing Fedora on your computer. How's that working out for you?
Hey, can't complain, pal. How's by you?
Oh, it's going good. Dude, I just installed Debian. It is wicked fast and stable.
So where you headed?
Oh, I'm going to the Northeast GNU Linux Fest.
By the way, what is this for?
Well, it's a conference for all GNU Linux users and open source software. There's going to be a keynote speaker. His name is Matt Lee. He's from the Free Software Foundation. He's going to be speaking on free software. And there's also going to be exhibitors there from like GNOME, KDE, and other open source projects where you can talk to them about the various things that they're doing within the project. And it's just going to be a great place to hang out with other GNU Linux users and geek out. Oh, by the way, Willie, the conference is at Worcester State University at 486 Chandler Street. Do you know how to get there?
Well, I know my way around New England, I can tell you that much.
Well, I guess I can just check out the directions on northeastlinuxfest.org. I know they have them there.
Okay, sure.
Oh, hey, Willie, how much is it for the toll?
The state charges $1.25, pal.
Man, $1.25? That's more than my operating system costs. Well, here you go.
Would you like a receipt with that?
Yeah, sure, I'll take one. Thanks.
And here you are.
Well, we'll see you later, Willie. Have a good day.
Hey!
Oh, what? Willie, you want to come with us to the GNU Linux Fest? Come on, man, get out of there. Hop in the car. We'll take off and go and have a great time.
I'm coming out of the booth!
That's right. So if you want to join us and Towbooth Willie at the Northeast GNU Linux Fest, it's going to be in Worcester, Massachusetts, at Worcester State University, located at 486 Chandler Street in the Student Center. It's going to be on April 2nd, starting at 10:30 a.m., going until 3 p.m. There's also going to be an after party at Jillian's, so come on down and have a great time. Visit us at northeastlinuxfest.org, and please, if you plan on coming, register so that way we know who to expect and who's coming. Again, visit us at the website, northeastlinuxfest.org. We hope to see you soon. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us on this episode of This Week in Debian. Today we are speaking with George Castro, the external developer project. I totally messed up George's title. George, you're going to have to help me out here.
God, it's so long. It's external project developer relations, but don't let that get in the way.
Yes, thank you. And I said it like five times before we started the podcast too, and then of course when it comes down to the time, I can't remember it. But George, thanks for joining us today. We're speaking with George because most of you will probably know George. He works with the Ubuntu project, and we're going to speak with him today about building off of Debian and Ubuntu being a Debian derivative. George, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So, George, before we get too far into the interview, I like to ask everyone that we interview, how did you first get involved into Linux? How did you first find Linux?
I don't remember what triggered it, but I do remember specifically the first thing I tried was like a cheap byte CD of Red Hat 5.2, which was a long time ago now. And my first Debian-based derivative that I got introduced to was the old Corel Linux, which was one of the first commercial Debian that you bought in a box. But I don't remember what year that came out. And then from there, I ran Debian until Ubuntu came out.
Oh, I didn't know Corel was based off of Debian. I think that was like the late 90s, wasn't it, that was around?
Yeah, and I remember at the time I could never install Debian because it had like all these boot floppies, and back then the installer really, really was difficult to use. So Corel was the first one that I could get installed, and it was my first introduction to Apt, because I had heard it was so amazing. But I could never get Debian actually installed, so I never actually got to use it until I ran Corel. And then I read somewhere on how to like transfer, after you got that installed, you could change the sources list and kind of change it to real Debian eventually after you updated. So that's how I started. And then after that, I got more familiar with it and actually figured out how to really install Debian.
That's pretty cool. So you said you were using Debian for a while until you started to use Ubuntu. How did you come across Ubuntu and get involved into that project?
Yeah, so at the time I was kind of on the side. I was writing Linux articles for Ars Technica. They're like a tech blog. And I had known one of the original Ubuntu guys, Jeff Waugh. He had been working for Canonical for some time already. And they were about ready to announce it, so him and I kind of knew each other already. And he PM'd me one day on IRC. He's like, hey, I want you to go try this, but don't really like tell anybody yet. And that was the first release, the Warty Warthog, in 2004 now.
Wow, so you were there right at the beginning then, huh?
Yeah, I was pretty lucky. I mean, ever almost since like the very beginning, and then I attended my first developer summit the next year in Australia, where we were doing planning for 5.10, I think it was. Whichever one Hori was, the hedgehog one. So.
Okay. So do you know why, do you know what, like some of the reasons why Ubuntu chose to build off of Debian, to become a derivative of Debian?
Yeah, so I wasn't actually around when they made that decision. However, it's pretty obvious to me, and I think obvious to anyone who's working in Ubuntu like these days. So first of all, it's just a fantastic base to build on, right? It's got a really huge comprehensive archive of like almost anything, right? I used to tell friends, they're like, well, you know, I want to try so-and-so, but I can't find it in Debian. I'm like, well, if it's not in Debian, then it doesn't really exist, right? Because I kind of use Debian as the packaging, because everything was so well integrated and worked really well together that really, like, I didn't want to, like, deviate from anything that was out of that system and made my life miserable, you know, by manually having to install stuff and worry about it. So I've really always liked that all-inclusive, huge, you know, all you really need is Debian and you don't really need anything else. And if something's not in Debian, it's probably not good enough anyway for you to bother with. So that was kind of like the my personal reasons for using Debian. But, you know, the size of that archive is good, is just, you know, tremendous. Also, Debian's been around for a really long time. The Debian free software guidelines are basically like, you know, like a good guideline that a lot of projects like derive from. I mean, there's really not, to me, I mean, I don't really see why you would want to build on anything that isn't Debian. But now that it's been a few years and stuff, we have a lot of expertise that we rely on Debian for. And, you know, I just think it's the best thing to build something off of, right? Because Debian is so huge that if you want to build something that's focused for a slice, like, for example, Ubuntu isn't as, like, trying to do as huge a thing as Debian, right? Debian's kind of sort of like a big tree, right? But maybe sometimes you don't need a big tree. I just need a small plant on my desk, right? So we know specifically what we want Ubuntu to be, and we can take the slices there, you know, that we need in order to make Ubuntu based off Debian to be exactly what we need. Just like another, you know, all these little smaller distributions that maybe, you know, all they want to do is be a really good firewall, right? You could just, you know, use the part of Debian that's important to you. So.
Right. And you mentioned there's some things that I can't remember how you phrased it. There's some things that you guys I don't want to say you said depend on, but what are some of the things that you lean on Debian for? Like, can you give some examples?
So the large majority of the packaging actually derives from Debian. So the way we are organized in Ubuntu, we have four sections to the archive. We have main, which is the stuff that we fully support. That's basically everything on the CD, like your GNOME, your KDE, your kernel. And then we have a section called multiverse, which is where we stick kind of non-free drivers, like your NVIDIA, your ATI drivers that are closed source, but they're redistributable. That's another area where we differ from Debian. But then we have this other section called universe, which, you know, like you can kind of nickname it the rest of Debian, which is like somewhere upwards now of like 20,000 packages of just things that we import from Debian and we're source compatible with. And that's really the long tail of software that that we support for people based on community contributions. So a lot of those comes, they're directly imported from Debian.
Okay, so your universe repo, is it basically, essentially, for lack of a better term, is it basically a straight up like Debian repo, basically, that's just ported right into Ubuntu? You guys don't even touch any of that stuff?
Right. So what we do is at the beginning of every cycle, our toolkit guys, like Matthias, Klosa, and those guys, they pick like whatever the GCC version is going to be for that release, right? And then for a period of a few months, we automatically import, these are source imports, all of Debian, and then we rebuild them. Because we use slightly different compilers and stuff than Debian, so we rebuild everything. However, in certain cases, like when Debian was is working to do its next release, and we did our long-term supported release, usually our toolkit people will talk ahead of time, so they can settle on things like a compiler version that will... you know, that both can maintain. So what we do, generally speaking, is at the beginning of every cycle, we look at where Debian is in their release cycle, where we are. And in a case where it lines up where Debian's about to do a major release and we're doing a major release, they'll do things like agree on a certain compiler version, ABIs, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that makes it easier for both Debian developers and Ubuntu developers to kind of synchronize there on versions, which is really handy for everybody.
Okay, so then, so like the universe repo, then you said you just pull on all the source of like those 20 odd thousand packages. You pull on all the source, then you have like basically a build farm that just compiles everything for Ubuntu's universe repo then?
Absolutely, yep.
Now you said that you guys might use different compilers or compile it differently. What's the advantage or disadvantage of doing that? Like, are you guys gaining anything by not just taking how Debian does it and just like porting it over into Ubuntu? I mean, is there what exactly are you doing differently to the packages or not differently?
Yeah, so usually we don't touch the source package at all. Usually just needs to be like rebuilt for whatever tool chain is going to ship in that Ubuntu. The reason we don't, they're just not binary imports, because like if let's say there's a slightly different version of the compiler that are shipping between what Ubuntu ships and what Debian ships or whatever, then they're not exactly binary compatible. So this is all source compatibility we're talking about. Because
I see.
You can't really just – people do it. I mean, I've seen people take binary built devs from one and the other and run it, you know, on the other. And, you know, that's awesome when it works. But, you know, the right way to do it is just to do it at the source level. And then run binary built stuff for Debian on Debian and stuff built for Ubuntu on Ubuntu.
Okay. And now the main repo that you mentioned, you said that, I think you said that GNOME and KDE are in there. Are there any other packages in the main repo that are from Debian that you change drastically and then you just maintain it yourself? Like what exactly is in the main repo?
Right. So that's basically everything you would get in a distro from like X, the kernel, all your applications, Firefox, OpenOffice, things like that. Now, in certain cases, the work is done, like either the packaging might be shared with Debian, or not in some cases. Like, for example, our GNOME, we take directly from upstream GNOME.
Okay, so you don't even take that from Debbie, and then.
No, we kind of just maintain that on our own.
Okay. All right, so then if someone files a bug against the Ubuntu GNOME, you're going straight upstream with that. Then it's not because you're not building on Debian's GNOME.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually a very tricky part of my job is when users report bugs, we need to make sure that the bugs are getting to the right people. Because usually, so we have this thing called Apport, right? Like when, let's say your Firefox crashes, it automatically files a bug in Launchpad, which is our bug tracking system, right? And then we need to figure out, well, did we introduce that bug or is it really Firefox upstream somewhere? So we have tools in Launchpad that allow users and developers to link bugs upstream. And that can get complicated, especially, let's say I'm a user and I find a bug report, on a piece of software and I report it in Launchpad. Usually for a lot of these, we want to forward those, onto Debian, right? If it affects the Debian package. And then at that point, someone can decide, well, it's also it's not a bug in the packaging at all. So it's neither Ubuntu or Debian's fault. It's, you know, whoever wrote the software, that's where the bug is. So sometimes we might just tell people, look, just report the bug upstream. And then that way, they don't have to deal with, you know, reporting with the bug to us or reporting the bug to Debian. They could just report it to proper thing. However, that can get a little tricky because a lot of users, especially since we kind of target new users and things like that, they might not have any idea, you know, how to really report bugs very well. So what our QA team, we spend a lot of time cleaning up bugs, making sure we get really, really good bugs, and then forwarding those on so that you don't, so that either Debian or the upstream maintainer doesn't get a whole bunch of junk bugs. They can at least get the bugs that are useful instead of the junk. And then specifically for Debian, we try to measure, we use deb tags to try to measure how many of those bugs and stuff are forwarding forward. And the same thing applies to patches as well, right? If I find a bug in some software and then, especially if it's in Universe, right? And then they attach the bug in Launchpad, that's something we continually always strive to do is making sure that that patch also makes its way back to the Debian maintainer and to upstream if it applies there.
Okay. So if someone files a bug in Universe, it's more than likely going to be pushed back up to Debian because like you're saying, you're basically taking all the source from Debian and Universe and recompiling it or whatever. So if it's a package in Universe, it's pretty much going to go back to Debian. But if it's a bug or a patch in main, that's going to more than likely go upstream?
Yes, usually. Now, there's always exceptions to these. Like, if it was easy, then, like, I wouldn't have anything to do all day. But usually, like, a lot of my job depends on, like, sometimes a DD for Debian developer might accidentally run into a patch that's, like, in a hidden corner of our bug tracker somewhere. And then naturally they, you know, they're like, man, if someone would have shown me this patch, you know, then I could have applied it in Debian or whatever months ago and stuff like that. So a lot of this is how weird is us trying to figure out how to make that workflow better for everyone. So ideally, if a Debian developer wants to find our patches, it should be easy for them to see them. And that's something we've been working with Debian for a while. So Lucas Nussbaum actually added this to qa.debian.org. Where if you look up for a package, let's say XChat or something, at the bottom right corner, there's a quick link to all of our package information and like all of our patches. And then what we did on the Ubuntu QA side is where when you look up, you know, a package, it will link back to the Debian QA thing. So it's just little things like that we try to do for maintainers to make it easier for them to say, you know, oh yeah, I wonder what Ubuntu is doing with this package. So, you know, make it easier for them to find patches if they are. And of course, that's just, it's one of those things where it's always a work in progress, right? Because, you know, like I said, the archive, over 20,000 packages, you're not going to get them all. So we don't try to like, we don't try to like write a script or anything that does it because those never work anyway. So it's just something that just takes constant vigilance from all maintainers to just always consistently try to make sure that you're connecting the right people to the right place.
So speaking of working with Debian with, you know, these bug fixes and patches and everything, how is that going as far as the Debian Ubuntu relationship? That, you know, I'm sure you probably read in like blogs or whatever, or, you know, hear other people saying, like, people in like the Linux community will say, Debian can't stand Ubuntu, and all the developers hate Ubuntu, and Ubuntu developers hate Debian developers, and they're always at each other's throats or whatever. So, I mean, you're in the middle of it, so, I mean, if anyone has any authority on the subject, I'd imagine it would be you, or, you know, someone in your circle at least. So, how's that going with, you know, working with Debian for all this stuff?
Yeah, it's actually really unfortunate, because, like, sometimes, like, you'll read stuff, and you'll be like, oh, well, no one really told us that we're supposed to hate each other and be angry. you know, it's funny, too, because of, due to the nature of my job, I get to go to a lot of, like, open source shows and stuff. And when we did the joint KDE GNOME, the Open Desktop or Gran Canaria Desktop Summit, it was just, it was awesome. You know, and everyone always wants to talk about their size and people don't like each other, but it's actually, I mean, I've been to like three dev comps now, and I keep telling people, I don't know where this reputation comes from, because, you know, a lot of Debian developers I met are very friendly. So, I mean, I've yet to have someone say, you know, I hate you because you work on Ubuntu and stuff. Obviously, there are cases where, you know, hey, if you mess something up, you're going to get flamed for it. But,
right.
You know, that's just kind of the nature of life. I think it's unfortunate that, like, especially, you know, people that write on blogs and stuff try to portray something that isn't there. But if someone actually believes something like that, I recommend them to actually, you know, attend a DebConf or any of the Debian events, or go to the Debian room at FOSDEM, you know, the kind of events where Debian developers are actually hanging out and that kind of stuff. And because there is overlap, you'll see Ubuntu people there as well. And the same thing goes for Ubuntu events as well. So Zach, the Debian project leader, has attended a few UDSs, and we always have work group sessions where we try to figure out ways that we can make this patch maintainership and reducing the delta kind of stuff work. So, you know, I've always been of the opinion that, you know, especially now more than ever, there's good things happening between Debian and Ubuntu. So, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, Zach is pretty awesome. Like I was saying before the interview, we were talking, and you know, he's like, I never got to speak with the project leader before him, Steve McIntyre, I believe. I never got to really speak with him, but from what I can tell about Zach, he seems all about, you know, the Debian community and being involved and doing what he can. So he's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty great. I mean, you know, I like it because he's and this just isn't Ubuntu specific, but I think it's great to have Debian as a project itself kind of reaching out towards derivatives. So he was pushing for this derivatives front desk, which kind of gives us a workspace where, you know, people like us can bring forward concerns. Right. So if we say, hey, you know, before we kind of relied on people knowing each other to kind of connect things. But now we have a more formal thing where we could say, hey guys, we want to do foo and bar. So I'll give you just a quick example of this. In our package descriptions, we want those more user-friendly. So, you know, if you do an apt-cache search Firefox, it'll show you the package description. And a lot of these are really geeky because they've been around for like 15 years and no one wants to change them. So we're trying to figure out a way to make it easier for users to basically contribute, because, you know, there's no way we can have a few hundred developers just update them all. That would be insane, right? We can get, like, community involvement. But, you know, something like that affects Debian a lot, right? I mean, we're, you know, you don't want to, like, have a delta that we would maintain. So these are the kind of things that we approach, you know, Debian with. We say, hey, we're thinking about doing this. And then Zach's like, oh, that, you know, yeah, we should talk about that. And then since we happened to be at the same event, Vincent was there from OpenSUSE. So we moved that discussion to, like, the free desktop list where, you know, we basically said, hey, I want to make descriptions and stuff better. We're kind of looking at doing it this way. Debian's kind of doing this. Here's a link. Here's what Sousa wants to do. And then the Fedora guy chimes in. Hey, we're not, you know, this is what we're going to do. So we've already started to kind of collate what we need to do. And it's just nice to be able to have a derivatives front desk, whereas if I was, you know, George's firewall distro built on Debian, that I had that avenue available to me, because then I could see what other derivatives are doing, because I would, you know, we're all kind of fundamentally lazy. I would hate to have to redo something that someone else has already done. So
right, if anything,
if other Debian derivatives see what we're doing and at least, like, steal that, then that's a win for me.
So you said that you went to a couple of DevConfs. How many, like, Ubuntu developers are, I think Jono was at the last one, too. Does like, Mark Shuttleworth go to any of those also?
Yeah, he's been to quite a few. He's been to all the ones I've gone to. I was in Argentina, which was really great. We just had one in New York. Mark has spoken at the one in New York was just this summer. Mark spoke there about Unity, and I actually did a session on this kind of thing between collaborations between the two projects. That kind of like made me do it, so that was a lot of fun. But yeah, Mark is usually heavily involved in DevConf. He usually stops by, and we usually, let's see, I don't know, about 20-ish or so of our people show up. Some of them come in to DevConf, so they hack the day before. And like I said, a lot of like our core platform people, what we call our foundations team, either are still involved in Debian or have been involved in Debian in the past. So for a lot of them, it's just reuniting with their friends.
Do the Debian developers like Zach or whoever else might go to like UDS, do they like play a part in any sort of like the development of like the next release of Ubuntu? Do they kind of give their two cents in certain discussions, or are they just kind of there to support and maybe
Absolutely. So our development summits are open to everyone, and anyone can attend and speak their mind. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't really realize until they actually start working on it that actually releasing a distribution is very, very, very difficult. I mean, it's not easy. Otherwise, everyone can do it. But there's a lot of things that need to happen that do affect Debian and affect us as well. In fact, we welcome and want Debian developers to participate in our developer summits. We get a lot more participation when we have them in Europe, just kind of the way it is, because it's more centralized and because of public transportation. But we do encourage DDs to show up whenever we're in town, because the summit does run. But yeah, I mean, there's been cases where we said, yeah, this is a really good idea, and then a DD will raise his hand, actually, how will this affect, you know, how this is in Debian? And we even have specific sessions. It's mostly one specific session in UDS that's basically, we call it the Debian health check session, where people just kind of bring forth their concerns and things like that. We've had that session about 3 or 4 times now, and it was really good the last time, because this is Zach's second one. So the first one, he was kind of like, you know, getting the feel for it. The second one, he kind of had the list, and he just really like ran the session and had all the agenda items of things we had to talk about and things like that. So when you have that kind of working relationship, it's awesome for me, because I just went in there and then I left with a to-do list of stuff. And then with DevConf happening in the summer, usually when we show up, that's when I take the time to see how we're doing, or if there's any issues and stuff like that need to be resolved. And I do know that Matt Zimmerman and Zach do talk regularly. And I don't know if they do or not, but in the past, the DPL and Mark have always had regular calls and stuff like that.
Yeah. With, I'm sure people have heard in the news now, you know, Ubuntu's moving to the Unity desktop, and be looking at, you know, using Wayland instead of X at some point. With these kind of moves building off of Debian, is that going to make it more difficult to use Debian as like your base or to build off of it? Or is that going to cause any sort of problems when you're, moving away from the Debian? Like, well, I mean, you already don't use GNOME, you said, but I mean, is that going to make things any more difficult to, like, you know, to build off of Debian?
Yeah, so that's a good question. That's actually something we brought up at the health check session. See, before you had, you know, Ubuntu was just kind of a packager, right? But now,
right,
especially as Canonical starts to basically do upstream development, it's kind of weird, right? Because then the Unity developers become upstream.
Right.
And then they go into Ubuntu, and then, you know, trying to get that into Debian. So first off, I mean, Unity is really just a shell based on GNOME. So you kind of just like run the shell instead of running the GNOME shell. So we still have Evolution. We still have Firefox and all that stuff.
Okay.
And like I said, if you think about it as a whole, if you look at the entire archive, 700 megs worth of packages on the one CD is a relatively small amount. Usually, I think, from my perspective, the user visible stuff that gets swapped out isn't a big deal. It's always the underlying stuff that is always the challenge, you know, things like Python or, the ongoing discussions about init and Debian, systemd or upstream.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those are the really complicated ones. I don't think the user experience are going to be terribly difficult. However, we're definitely interested in someone sticking Unity and Debian, because if someone wants, if someone wants to run Unity on Debian, they should absolutely be, get the best Unity and Debian experiences they can. Unfortunately, right now, we're still early in the stage of just starting to polish off Unity as something that's usable. So we're just past Alpha 1.
Yeah.
But like we did with some of the other bits, it's just going to be a matter of time of getting the packaging into shape and then having someone in Debian who's interested in bringing Unity to Debian.
Okay.
So.
And then maybe...
But yeah, it's just going to be a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying then, like, instead of using the GNOME shell, Unity is just replacing the shell. So I guess, you know, it might be a little bit difficult, but not impossible, I guess, then. So, now maybe you can...
Yeah, the new stuff...
No, no, go ahead.
The new stuff that we've written in the past, we did the Ayatana indicators.
Yeah.
And things like that. There's been interest in Debian, and someone has been working on those. So, you know, Unity is just another one, just the next step to that.
With maybe you can put this discussion to rest. I'd imagine, again, you would know a little bit more about this than what other people are saying. There's been, like, again, blog posts or whatever, and people on Identica or whatever saying that, you know, Unity is going to be building off of, like, old GNOME 2.32 or whatever, and not even using GNOME 3. So people are just like been complaining about that. Is Unity going to be using the full blown GNOME 3 and just replacing the GNOME shell? How exactly is that going to work?
Yeah, so currently we're going to stick with 2.30 or 32, basically the last of the 2.x series. That's going to be our 2D fallback. Because GNOME 3 and Unity both require
3D acceleration, right? Yeah,
with the graphics cards. Right. So if you have like one of those old VIA desktops and stuff, you can't run either of them. So what we're doing is we're still going to ship the current GNOME, the latest 2.x, which is the, you know, the older two panels and stuff.
Yeah.
So when you install 11.04. If your hardware can support Unity, it'll just run Unity. If not, you'll get the desktop that you have like today.
Okay. So so if you have the hardware acceleration, is GNOME 3 going to load up with Unity Or is it still GNOME 2.x with Unity?
Yeah, so Unity is like a separate shell, so you don't really run GNOME 3 and Unity at the same time. So certain parts of so GNOME shell and parts of Unity are based on like GTK 3.
Yeah.
Right. So most of it's like the plumbing is there. So if you think of like GTK as like the plumbing,
yeah,
and stuff, it's just the kind of house that you want to build on top of it. So by default in 11.04, you'll get the Unity experience. Right now, however, due to like transitions of stuff, we're having a hard time maintaining GNOME shell in our archive. So what we're doing is a whole bunch of people who've been maintaining GNOME shell PPAs and things like that.
Yeah.
We just set up a new team for them. And what we're doing here, because of the way permissions are with the archive, we kind of had to kick them out of the archive and put them in a PPA.
Okay.
That way they don't have to, they have the freedom to like update it as much as they want without like worrying about our release freezes and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, right now there's going to be a GNOME 3 PPA for people to update. And there's like three people already working, on it. It's just getting set up this week. So if you do want to run GNOME shell, you can just add this PPA on top of Natty,
yeah,
and then you should be set. Now, as you know, after like the transition, and it's just a weird period right now where some applications still need to be ported to GTK 3. Some are further ahead of others.
Yeah.
Right now, it's just really difficult to run Unity and GNOME shell on the same system without it totally breaking.
Yeah.
And if you ask anyone who's actually tried to run GNOME shell, like, you know, like one lower GTK library breaks and like your icons disappear and stuff like that. But that's just something as both technologies mature, that'll be less and less of an issue.
So,
but I suspect that GNOME 2 will be around for a while, especially for people who, you know, and even if you do have the hardware to run the new Bling, sometimes your hardware might be capable, but the driver might suck. So
yeah, that's true.
You know, so we need to keep the older stuff around for at least compatibility reasons.
So with using the GNOME 2.x and like since you're grabbing GNOME from upstream and not dealing with Debian, is GNOME gonna give you a hard time if you start getting like bugs with Unity and people reporting bugs at Unity and it not like cooperating well with maybe GNOME or whatever? Are they gonna tell you to like go pound sand if because they're like, look, you're adding this thing on top of us, we don't want to deal with it. Are they gonna give you a hard time?
Yeah, so that's something that we're just gonna have to figure out when we get there. Because at the base level, a lot of it is built on the same technology,
right?
GTK and whatnot. Hopefully, my hope is that people can run GNOME shell if they like that experience. People can run Unity if they like that experience. But, you know, evolution will work the same in both, or at least, not break.
Right.
That's part of the reason that we do fallbacks and stuff, like when we introduce the indicators, things like that. So if you're an application author and you want to support application indicators in Ubuntu, if our library isn't loaded, it falls back to like whatever the other thing was. But yeah, that's just going to be something that we're going to have to deal with as both technologies mature. So I'm sure it's going to make for some interesting GWADEX and things like that. But I don't think anyone who works on GNOME or Unity wants people's experience to suck more than
right. Yeah. So, yeah. Absolutely. Now, when it comes to Wayland, when you guys try to move over to that, again, are you going to encounter problems with Debian being a derivative of Debian? Like, because if I'm not mistaken, don't you basically have to almost like, you know, recompile everything to work on Wayland instead of working in X? Like, I don't know technically exactly how that works, but that's what I've heard. So we have problems with that, like trying to, you know, again, using Debian for a base. Like, is that going to be a problem?
Yeah, I don't think so, because I think by then, so the Wayland thing isn't something that's just going to happen overnight. It's just going to be something that we're going to transition to. And obviously, Fedora and Red Hat one of the main Wayland guys is like working for them. So me personally, I think that everyone is going to switch to Wayland at some point. You know, if it does indeed end up being like the greatest thing since sliced bread. And it's just going to be one of those things like it is with major transitions between distros, right? Sort of like the transition between a 2.4 kernel and 2.6. There was that like odd period of 6 months where like, you know, distros were finishing up their very last releases of 2.4, but we're still trying to make sure they were set to 2.6. So, I mean, that switching away, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not something like switching out your browser or anything like that. It's like a fundamental way of how like the Linux desktop works. So it's just one of those things where we're going to have to wait until, you know, it actually is further along for people to start to mess with it and get it better before I think distros are ready to flip the switch. And there have been plenty of cases too where because of our PPA infrastructure and we're kind of, we try to be a little bit more leading where we can, we put newer stuff in Ubuntu and then Debian can kind of wait and see whether it works or not and then decide whether they want to take it or not.
Yeah, because I'm on one of the GNOME mailing lists and one guy was talking about it and he was just like, yeah, realistically, he's like, no one's going to move to this for at least another year. And he was like, it won't be anywhere near ready until then. So, but I guess it would be smart, though, if all the distros do end up moving to it to try and all kind of do it roughly at the same time. I guess that would make the transition a little smoother.
Yeah, true. And if, you know, assuming, you know, when it starts to get ready, it gets really awesome. Everyone's going to want it anyway. So you're going to have users and stuff trying to figure out how to make things work and stuff like that. And then at some point, it'll just happen. But, I mean, this is like a major transition I don't want to say it's unprecedented, but, you know, swapping out the entire display system for distros, I imagine, is not going to be a trivial amount of work whatsoever. It's one of those things where it'll be to everyone's advantage to work together with Upstream Wayland on this to figure out how
everyone's
going to do
it. Yeah, absolutely. So then, other than Unity and Wayland, I mean, is there, you know, what's Ubuntu's like long road vision of what they'd like to do? I read a blog post Matt Zimmerman did, and I think it was called like something about the four P's of Ubuntu, like platform. I can't remember the other three, but it was a pretty interesting blog post on how like there's the platform side of Ubuntu, then there's the operating system side of Ubuntu, like. What's Ubuntu trying to position itself in the Linux world? Where does Ubuntu want to be 3, 4, 5 years from now?
Well, I don't know. I can tell you what I want it to be in 3 or 4 years. I mean, if you think about it, Ubuntu's been around for 6 years, and even if you already asked me last year where we're going to be at in a year, I wouldn't be able to figure it out. But I think what I would like to see more and more of is, so we have Unity, and you mentioned the Wayland thing, is things like the Software Center, where we want to make it easy for application developers to write an application and then get it out to users very, very quickly. So in the beginning, how I said how I really liked that there was nothing in that, you know, if something wasn't in the archive, then I consider it a good thing, right? But if you think about it too, even with Ubuntu's quote unquote fast release schedule, let's say today you were to make a really, really awesome game, getting that out to users is actually almost impossible. If you're lucky in Ubuntu, you might get in before a freeze, and if you're lucky, it might come out in, you know, 6 months that you can get it out to users. If you're in Debian and you're following stable, it takes even longer, right? So one of the things that we're tackling right now is in the Software Center having a kind of extras repository where we can stick things like games and cool little launchers, you know, nothing like libraries or a new version of Python or anything like that, but we call it the extras repository, and it's kind of like for end user software, stuff that like revs very quickly, like, you know, things like that. And those kind of things are fundamentally different to the Debian and Ubuntu mentality of everything is a dev package. And then, you know, instead of updating your applications all separately, you update your entire operating system at once, right? Sort of like the Debian way. I think that's going to be a challenge because it's first of all, it's really hard, and it's hard to do correctly because remember, when you add someone's repository to your system and they write a deb, when they're installed, those packages run as root, right? So there has to be a balance there between how easy do we want to make people to give users packages, but at the same time, we don't want to end up being like Windows where anybody could just install anything anywhere and, you know,
right,
people's computers. So I, looking forward, I think solving that problem is where I would like to see Ubuntu head within the next 3 years. And then Ubuntu itself, I mean, there's, you know, getting this stuff to work on laptops for OEMs, you know, like being able to buy a System 76 laptop with Linux pre-installed is pretty great. All the work that Ubuntu is doing with Linaro and doing ARM enablement in order to get Linux on more and more devices quicker and quicker, I think is where I see Ubuntu contributing more over the next few years. But me personally, figuring out that Software Center kind of, I almost want my Debian cake, but I want frosting too, you know. But it's like I always tell people, it's funny because a lot of people claim that the rolling release is the solution to all their problems. They're like, I want the very latest of everything, but I want it to be stable and not break. And you're like, well, dude. You know, but I think we can go a long way of solving the problem, at least for the apps that people care about, that are like the cute little apps that people love on their desktops, right? Like maybe their favorite music player or their favorite little widget and stuff. I definitely think that keeping the Debian way of keeping the platform stable for major releases and not introducing new changes, I think for the core of the operating system, that's really great. But app developers really love to be able to be connected to their users, right? Like they want to be able to do a release and have it available to their users instead of having a distribution getting in their way. So I think that's going to be the challenge over the next few years.
Figuring that out. Yeah, definitely. Well, George, is there anything else that you want to discuss or go over that we didn't get a chance to mention that I might have overlooked?
No, not really. I mean, we hang out at #Debian-Ubuntu on OFTC. It's the channel where all the Debian channels are. And we're always looking for people to continue to work with Debian and Ubuntu. We have people that if you're either working on Ubuntu and you need help with working with Debian, we have people available. If you're a Debian developer or you find, you know, that bug or that patch that maybe got fixed in Ubuntu and not in Debian or the other way around, that channel and that mailing list is the place to find people that hang out. We make a concerted effort that when someone becomes an Ubuntu developer, that they fundamentally understand
Work
with Debian. So I think we're making progress in that area. Anyone who's interested in working in both projects and helping me build that bridge, if you want to be the next Raphael Herzog, then I welcome you to come to the channel, ask us any questions. Or you can always mail me at debian@ubuntu.com if you're run into any issues or anything. That's the email address we use where any Debian developer can or contributor actually can just tell us, hey, I found this. Here's a problem. I need help with this. And then
we'll
do our best to fix it.
Awesome. Do you guys have any mailing lists at all for that?
Yeah, actually, we try to do all our work on the Derrida's mailing list,
okay,
if it's appropriate for that. And if not, we just do it directly on the Ubuntu mailing lists. And, you know, people bringing up how to work with Debian on Ubuntu mailing lists is absolutely on topic. So we don't say.
Oh, okay. All right. That's cool.
It's important that everyone knows how to work with that. So, yeah, absolutely. Ask us questions. We love
to help. Actually, there's one last thing I forgot, which I think you sort of touched base on. So, the front desk thing that Debian's implementing, that's going to help a lot more kind of working together and bring a little more coherent bug fixing then, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been great so far. It's forced me to go back and clean up a bunch of our documentation. It's forced a bunch of people who typically just done it by habit because they've always done it. It's forced them to actually start writing stuff down. And then having the list there gives us an archive and a knowledge base to start. I almost kind of wish that list would have been around when Ubuntu started. So hopefully, you know, the next person that's doing an Ubuntu derivative at least can learn from the things that Debian and Ubuntu have worked on that have been good and bad in the past.
Yeah, yeah. Anything that can to streamline the bug squashing, I'm sure would be. Could probably get a lot more work. Not that, you know, squashing bugs and fixing and patching stuff isn't time well spent, but you could get more development done in other areas if you could streamline that process a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of cases where, you know, if things are working right, and from our side, if an Ubuntu user reports something, and then ideally it gets reported and fixed upstream, then all Debian needs to do is put in a new upstream version, and then Ubuntu just syncs off of it. So it's actually, it seems harder work up front to do all that linking and reporting and the right stuff, but at the end of the day, it saves everyone time, and it's just like a good idea to do. So.
Awesome. Well, George, I thank you so much for your work and your effort on the Ubuntu project and working with Debian and trying to bridge the gap between the two projects and working together and again, all the effort that you put into all of this. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks. It's definitely a lot of fun. I get a chance to work with free software people. It's always a lot of fun.
That must be pretty awesome.
I don't care what you read anywhere. It's always
a lot of
fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully nobody hates me.
I haven't seen anyone say they hate you, but not that I read like every blog in the world. But well, George, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I don't know if Matt forwarded you the email, if you like took the initiative and found me, but I appreciate it.
Yep. Nope.
Awesome. Yeah. So yeah, maybe sometime we can have you on again or someone else on and maybe a few people on from Ubuntu and talk about other aspects of working with Debian at some point. That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I tried to get someone, but I ran out of time, but I'd love to get some of the working teams and stuff. I always use the Mono team as the perfect example. I actually do all their work in Debian first and then sync back. I always use them as one of my dream teams of people who do it right. So it doesn't really matter whether you're Debian or Ubuntu, you get the same high-quality work from the same people. And the way they have their workflow figured out is just...
Yeah, definitely. Really, I mean, if you can arrange a schedule between whoever you want, I mean, you got my email, just get a hold of me. We could definitely do something. I'd love to do that.
That sounds awesome. I'll do my best to...
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate it. For you. Again, George, thanks for your time and all of your effort and your work, and have a good holiday, and thanks for your time.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk to you later, George. Thanks. Thank you for listening to This Week in Debian. If you know someone, or you yourself, are in the Debian community, please get a hold of us. We can interview you. If you'd like to get a hold of us, our email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Again, that email address is feedback@frostbitemedia.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.